was capable of into her voice. Nick cocked his head for a second, then let out something between a sigh and a snort. "I think we just had a misunderstanding," he said.
"Oh?"
Coach Persephone asked. The lights began to pulse once more, indicating another firing round was nearly upon them. Rather than stand with her, Nick walked over to the shooting area. From a nearby bin, he drew a pair of medium-sized pistols, one in each hand. He sized up the weapons, testing their weight and balance in the time it took to raise them. What followed next was, unbeknownst to anyone in the room, a near repeat of Amber's stunt minutes prior. While Nick's shots didn't take every target, they did hit most of them dead center. The sounds of gunshots echoed off the small wall in a nearly continuous report until both clips were spent. With a cold detachment and movements slick as an ice cube left on the kitchen counter, Nick finished off the last of his bullets and slid the guns back onto the table. He strode back over to Coach Persephone, whose mouth was slightly ajar.
"I'm not here to learn how to shoot, because I've been doing it since I was 3. I was taught to be ambidextrous, to fire on the run, and to draw at speeds that made sure mine was the first shot off. Add in the fact that I can dose my rounds with a healthy burst of good luck, and you understand why my bullets so often find their target. I was missing because I don't particularly like to broadcast that fact. It raises too many questions, and I hope you'll respect my privacy," Nick said simply. "If you have anything you think you can impart to me on being a better shot, I'll be glad to listen. Otherwise, I'm going to go work on an area where I actually need improvement."
"Dismissed, for now,"
Coach Persephone said, her voice still recovering a bit from the surprise.
"For next week's ranged training session, we'll be graduating you to a more advanced shooting range."
Nick gave a nod of understanding and stepped out the door. 110. Nick walked into the Melbrook dorm a few minutes later, thankful that the lift system could take him back to the top without involving Mr. Transport. He didn't expect anyone to be back yet, since they would actually be using this time for training, so it was a surprise when a voice called to him before he could get over to the boys' side.
"Nick, may I have a moment?"
Mr. Numbers asked, stepping out from the kitchen. Nick sighed loudly, and his shoulders slumped. He was only a few inches from the door. So close, and yet so far.
"Look, I know I should have just used the time and faked a few shots, but they were talking about doing this for an hour a week. That kind of time really adds up, and I feel like it's only fair for me to spend it actually improving myself,"
Nick said preemptively as he turned toward Mr. Numbers. Mr. Numbers blinked twice.
"I'm not sure what you're talking about, though I can assure you I will be before the end of the day."
"Awesome," Nick said.
"At any rate, I had something else I wanted to discuss with you. Something I'd like you to keep private from the rest of the group, excluding Mary,"
Mr. Numbers said.
"Ooh, now my curiosity is piqued," Nick said, a small grin growing on his face. Maybe this day would take a turn for the better, after all.
Vince was mortified. He sat in Coach George's office, waiting for the man to come in and let him know what the consequences from his accidental electrical outburst would be. There had been quite a bit of commotion after Vince had destroyed the power grid to the room, what with the small fires and people rushing in and whatnot. Vince had been hustled into this office and told to sit tight. He wished they'd skip the formality and tell him to just pack his bags now. The door slapped open as Coach George walked in. He was reading over a manila folder and collapsed into his chair without so much as sparing a glance for Vince.
"My goodness," Coach George said. "You did quite a little number on that room. The whole thing is going to have to be rewired and rebuilt. Not too shabby."
"Not too shabby?"
"Well, you didn't blow a hole through the concrete, so I'm not going to go calling it great or anything. It was respectable, though. You earned that."
"I'm confused," Vince admitted. "I thought I would be getting yelled at or kicked out right now."
"Kicked out? For what? You did what I told you. You tried to use a new type of energy in an environment specifically designed for learning to use your powers,"
Coach George said. "But I messed up. I wrecked the whole room," Vince pointed out.
"Oh yeah, you did screw up. No one's fighting you there," Coach George said. "But that's part of learning. I mean, if we drummed out everyone who ever had a slip-up, the only thing battling evil would be an overinflated sense of ideals."
"I guess. But I just thought, I mean, there were all those other students who got dropped last semester."
"Look, let me lay it out for you here. If you get lazy, or overconfident, or careless, then I'll have you out of my gym with a fresh boot print on your ass. No one is going to kick you to the curb for making an honest mistake in the pursuit of learning, though. That's how you get better at something. You screw up until you've learned not to screw up anymore. Let me ask you this. You going to try and shoot lightning the same way again?"
"God, no."
"Then lesson learned," Coach George said, spreading his arms.
"So if I'm not in trouble, then why was I brought here to wait for you?" Vince asked.
"We wanted to make sure you were okay. Things like this can really shake some people up, so we try to be proactive and talk to you about it as soon as it's happened. Put things in the right perspective and all,"
Coach George explained. "Oh, I guess that does sort of make sense," Vince said.
"That it does," Coach George agreed. "To that effect, though, do you know what went wrong today? I mean, you nailed Castillo no problem during the exam, but this time it seemed to get out of control."
"I'm not sure," Vince admitted. "It could be a lot of things. Thomas was closer, so maybe it never had the chance to split. I had less power to use in the first place. Maybe even my state of mind. I wasn't focusing on how to release the energy when I used it in the exam. I was just concentrating on getting the timing right. I can't sincerely say where it went wrong."
"That's okay," Coach George assured him. "It just means you've got a few more mistakes coming before you know how to handle this."
"Oh dear," Vince said.
"Don't worry so much. Next time we'll have you in a room where a mistake won't be quite as alarming," Coach George said. "Insulated walls, detached grid, grounded floors. Trust me, we've been doing this for a long time with a lot of supers."
"That might be okay then," Vince said.
"Nice to hear you're on board. Any other questions or things you want to talk about?"
"No, I think I'm all right for now," Vince said.
"Excellent. Then get your butt out of my office and back above ground," Coach George said. "I've got paperwork to do."
"Yes, sir," Vince said immediately, scampering up from his chair and dashing out of the office. "It's certainly contrived, and I can see why you'd want me and Mary helping," Nick said, after Mr. Numbers finished his proposal. "It could go over all right, though. Possibly even well."
"Happy to hear you're on board," Mr. Numbers said.
"I haven't actually said that yet," Nick pointed out. "I've only said it's logically sound in premise."
"Then what's stopping you?"
"As I told Mary, I don't do favors. You want me to help steer things positively for you? Then there's something I want in repayment," Nick replied.
"Dare I ask what?"
"Actually, nothing too complicated," Nick said. "I want you to agree that at some point in the future, you will submit to my request that you refrain from interfering in whatever I am doing at the time."
"I see. "And if I don't?"
Mr. Numbers asked.
"Then neither do I," Nick said. "That is the give and take of favors, after all. I would like to point out that I'm not asking for you to participate or intervene in any way with whatever activities I might be perpetuating, merely to do nothing. It's even possible you would have done nothing anyway, and I will have burned my favor pointlessly."
Mr. Numbers carefully weighed his options. Making an open-ended deal with someone like Nick was far from desirable. However, the terms were slightly in his favor. It only required him to feign ignorance, turning a blind eye at some future point. Even if it was at a critical juncture, Mr. Numbers was confident he could stick to the letter of the deal while still circumventing Nick's plans if needed. And, worst-case scenario, he could always just break his promise.
"Deal," Mr. Numbers said.
Nick spread a wide grin across his face.
"Then it looks like we're good to go."
111. Michael Clark was drinking again. He was alone in his dorm room, having paid the extra money to live without a roommate. He knew it was a bad habit for someone like him to have, and he sincerely had been trying to cut back. But days like this invariably seemed to find him at the bottom of a bottle. It was strange. He'd never had a drink before college, yet ever since some seniors had procured hooch for welcome weekend, he'd been hitting the sauce with regularity. Had Michael known a bit more about alcoholism, he would have known he was genetically predisposed to it by way of his mother. But that was one of the many subjects Michael had never bothered studying. He poured another glass of cheap scotch. Michael knew whose fault it was that he was here tonight. It was the same as always. Vince Reynolds. Michael could feel the alcohol curdle in his mouth at just the thought of that name. That little son of a bitch had shown him up on the first day, and even though Michael had emerged triumphant, it seemed like Vince was always nipping at his heels. Vince was ranked 8th, even though he'd lost in the first round. Vince was dating the hottest girl in the freshman class. Vince lived in some fancy, high-class private dorm with only 4 other students. Even today, Michael had been showing off his tremendous skill at ranged fighting. Everyone was impressed. And then, what happens? They finish up and find out Vince had nearly wiped out an entire room without even trying. Oh, sure, he'd said it was an accident, but who would buy something like that? No, Vince had wanted to show up Michael once again, to show one more time that even though Michael was clearly better, Vince was the one who would get the attention. Michael noticed his glass was empty and swiftly remedied that problem. Ever since that first day when Vince had thought so little of Michael's abilities that he'd shown up with barely any energy to fight with, Michael had known what kind of prick that silver-haired douche really was. And sooner or later, everyone else would, too. Michael fully intended to see to that. Julia Shaw was painting her toenails a candy apple red, watching television. She wasn't sure why she was bothering. Boys never paid enough attention to feet, and she didn't have any capable female competition to notice the cute little details. She shrugged and kept on with it anyway. Even if no one else noticed, she still knew, and it made her feel pretty. She glanced absent-mindedly at the clock. 10 until 9. If Roy was going to come over, he wouldn't do so until 10:30 at the earliest. Herschel liked to study in the evenings, and Roy wasn't going to pick up the academic slack, so they usually didn't switch over until 10.
Julia felt a slight tingle of frustration that she knew so much about the schedule of a boy she wasn't even dating. Not that she wanted to date a hound like Roy anyway. Okay, maybe a little. He was just so much fun. It felt like every minute spent with him was energized and entertaining. Not to mention the things he could do in bed. Julia shivered involuntarily. She didn't think she could ever go back to boys that weren't supers after so many months intermittently rolling through the sheets with Roy. Julia smiled as she switched to the next foot. Herschel had told her recently that their situation was the longest Roy had consistently maintained a booty call. It wasn't the nicest compliment, she could freely admit that, but it was something. Julia felt she was far and wide the most capable virgin out there. She shared memories, sensations, and experiences with her clones, but she'd never known a man with her own body. That she was saving until marriage, just as the Lord intended. Besides, when she could feel everything the clones felt anyway, what was the point in soiling her purity? Julia finished the other foot and blew on it. They should be done by the time Roy might roll through. Even if they weren't, though, no harm done. It wasn't like it would actually be her own feet hiked over his muscular shoulders anyway. That was clone work. Will yawned loudly and set down the book he'd been flipping through. He slid his glasses down to the edge of his nose and massaged the bridge. Will had hit a wall earlier in the night and was trying to slowly bore through it. Sitting in front of him was what might appear to the layman as a falconer's glove with wires running across and through it. In fairness to the layman, that's exactly what it was. Will stared at his glove-shaped obstacle, and then turned his eyes away. Today's class had brought to his attention that while he'd created several devices for Jill to use, he was still lacking anything dependable in his own ranged arsenal. Sure, he could use one of the guns or throwing weapons they provided him, but that would be as good as stamping his own pass home. Will was under no illusions. He was here because of his gift with technology. If he couldn't deliver in that department every time, then there was no point for him to be enrolled at Lander. Not in the HCP, at least. So if he wanted to stay, he needed to show up to the next training session with a weapon all his own. Will pushed his glasses back into their normal position and picked up the book once more. He wasn't going to sleep until he'd gotten at least 3 shots out of this thing. No compromises. No excuses. If Will failed out, then Jill would be here all alone, and he'd promised a very long time ago to make sure that never happened to her. Not again, anyway. Will's resolve strengthened, and he began tweaking one of the circuitry systems. It sparked and sizzled in less than 4 seconds. It was going to be a long night. 112. Friday afternoon, as she trudged home from class, Alice had to admit she'd had better birthdays. She'd had worse ones, too, but those had been the ones spent at home. Since her father was usually off doing his own thing, Alice would take her birthday as an opportunity to go on a trip, seeing Tuscany or Paris or Venice, sometimes all of them in the span of a few days. She'd had to take precautions, of course. A powered girl can't very well travel without some assistance in case of floating. But on the whole, she'd still enjoyed herself immensely. This one had been bleh so far. She'd been in a bit of a funk all week, ever since date night last Friday.
The range training on Monday hadn't made things any better, reminding her once again how useless she was compared to her peers. She would have hung out with Mary to make herself feel better, but the small girl had been occupied with something all week long. Vince and Herschel had become swept up in papers for different classes, and in a fit of desperation, Alice had even tried to waste time with Nick. Sadly, even he was busy with other things, leaving Alice to her own devices. When she'd come down from floating last Friday, Alice had convinced herself that she was overreacting to her friends going out on dates. It didn't mean they were going to abandon her or neglect their friendship. It just meant they had something new and awesome in their lives. Making her way slowly back to Melbrook, she was wondering if she had been right the first time. They weren't even walking with her today. They'd been off like shots as soon as gym had ended. She wasn't sure how they'd gotten out of there so quickly. Alice was almost certain she'd been in the first group up a lift. She let out a breath, hoping to see it hang in the air. That time of year was done, though. The days were warmer with each sunrise. Too bad. Alice sort of liked the cold. Perhaps she was taking this all too personally. It was college. People were bound to be busy from time to time. Besides, she hadn't even told anyone it was her birthday today. She could hardly blame everyone for not making a fuss when she'd never clued them in to why they should. They probably would have, too. Alice understood that rationally. Somewhere in the back of her head was a small voice that repeated the same question whenever she tried to cheer herself, though. What if they didn't? That's why Alice hadn't told anyone it was her birthday. Because right now, there was an excuse for no one caring. If she'd said something and they still hadn't, well, then she might have had to face an unfortunate truth or two. It was better this way, she assured herself as she neared Melbrook. Better to play it safe and maintain a medium level of happiness. Contentment had worked for her all her life. It would certainly suffice for today. Alice opened the Melbrook front door and walked down the hallway. It seemed too silent for after class on a Friday. They should be on the other side of the door watching television and making a ruckus. Herschel savoring the last few hours before he handed off the weekend to Roy. Vince and Nick debating how to spend the evening before eventually settling on something ridiculous. And Mary sitting quietly and laughing at them all. Alice had gotten used to it. She supposed they were busy. Even on a Friday, they all had their own things to do. Alice wondered if it was too late to book dinner and a massage in town. That would certainly be a combination to lift her spirits. She reached the end of the hallway and pressed her thumb against the pad. It beeped, and Alice stepped into the common room. Surprise! The lights flashed on, though why they had been off was anyone's guess, since the room didn't have any windows to the outside, and the Melbrook students leapt out from behind various pieces of furniture. Once again, one could speculate on why they'd been hiding in the first place. However, one might conjecture that a surprise party has some conventions so inherent to it that they are obeyed even when non-applicable.
What now?
Alice sputtered, trying to regain her composure.
It's a surprise party,
Mary said, stepping forward.
Hence us yelling surprise. You know, for your birthday. Wait. How did you know it was my birthday? Mr. Numbers and Mr. Transport told us,
Mary replied.
They actually helped us organize the whole thing.
That's suspiciously nice of them,
Alice remarked.
Nah, they're actually pretty good guys, Vince chimed in. Otherwise, we wouldn't have known about your special day, since someone didn't bother to tell us.
Oh, well, birthdays aren't such a big deal in my family. I guess it slipped my mind,
Alice said lamely. Happens to the best of us, Nick said. Luckily for you, it certainly didn't slip ours. Now, I hope you're prepared for a night of collegiate celebration.
Alice let out a smile she wouldn't have believed possible earlier in the week.
I think that might be okay.
Your words say okay, but your height says awesome, Nick said.
My what?
Mary tugged on her sleeve and pointed down. Alice glanced at the floor and realized she was nearly a foot above it. With as much grace as she could manage, Alice lowered herself back to a gravitationally compliant position.
Old habits,
she said by way of explanation.
At least we can always tell when you're happy,
Herschel pointed out.
She's like a buoyancy mood ring, Nick agreed.
For her own part, Alice just kept on grinning like an idiot. As for that questioning voice in the back of her head, it wasn't entirely gone, of course. Such things just don't happen overnight. It did shut the hell up for the evening, though. There was a certain amount of triumph in that fact alone. 113. Alice was exhausted, but filled with the soft glow of genuine delight. She was sprawled on the couch in the common room, the last woman standing from the night's festivities, and festive they had been. It turned out the reason everyone was so busy this week was that they'd each been putting things together for her party. Vince had scoured cookbooks and local grocery stores in an effort to make a 5-star dinner. He'd actually done pretty well, too, starting with scallops, then rack of lamb, and finishing up with a tiramisu, all of which were Alice's favorites. She wasn't entirely sure how he'd worked that out, but then again, she'd gone dining with Mary several times, so maybe the small girl had just paid a lot of attention. Mary had gone above and beyond, too. After dinner, they'd gone to a section out in the forest that had been completely overhauled. There were stands, barriers, and even some small bunkers. Herschel had designed an entire paintball course, and Mary had built it, all in the span of a week. Here, they met up with Thomas, Will, Jill, Sasha, and Alex to participate in a paint-based battle that can only be described as truly epic. Turns out 9 supers in the woods makes for quite a tournament. Alice still wasn't certain who had won, since after a certain point, it seemed to degenerate more into a brawl than any regulated system of scoring. She just knew it had been fun. After a return to Melbrook, everyone had showered, then had a slice of the fudge cake Vince had somehow cobbled together when no one was looking. Songs were sung, candles were blown out, and more processed sugar was ingested. Eventually, the others had grown tired and headed off to their respective dorms. Then, her own dorm mates had begun succumbing to the demands of biology and gone to bed. Alice had been too wired. Even now, as she sat alone in the common room, she felt jazzed up. She'd be sleeping late tomorrow, no doubt, but that's what Saturdays were for. She readjusted her pose, and a white envelope fell to the floor. Ah, yes, she'd nearly forgotten. Herschel had given that to her before going to bed, emphasizing quite clearly that it was from Roy, and Roy alone. At the time, she'd been hugging Mary goodnight, but now her curiosity was tickled.
She slid a manicured nail beneath the envelope's lip, breaking the seal. Inside was a slip of paper with only a few lines written on it. Redeemable for one night of sex. Roy Daniels. Alice couldn't stop herself. She began laughing with her whole body. The best part was that she knew, in Roy's mind, this was probably a very thoughtful gift. That notion redoubled her chuckles. Finally, the fits subsided down to giggles as she wiped a few tears from her eyes and carefully placed Roy's coupon back in the envelope.
Still in the party spirit, I see.
Alice whipped her head around. Nick was standing by the boys' side door, holding a small book at his side and dressed in sweatpants and a t-shirt.
I didn't hear you come in, Alice said.
That tends to happen when your eyes are shut and your ears are ringing with laughter. Plus, I'm actually 20% ninja, so there's that too, Nick said.
He walked over and sat down on the couch with her.
20%? How does that work?
Oh, a great-grandparent who was a full ninja, and then an uncle who was a fifth or something. I've never been great with fractions, so who could tell?
We all have our failings, Alice replied. Why are you still awake?
Aside from the cackling emanating from the common room? I wanted to give you your present, Nick said.
And here I assumed you being civil all night was my gift, Alice said.
Nope, just happenstance. It's hard to be snarky when looking down the barrel of a gun stuffed with paint.
I can see your point, Alice agreed.
Any guesses on what you're getting?
I wouldn't mind another night out with that guy I introduced to my dad. He was pretty enjoyable company, Alice said.
Sorry, he was sort of conjured on the spot. I don't know if I could do that again even if I wanted to. Nick lied.
Ah, well, Alice said. I suppose you'll do for now.
So happy to hear it. Anyway, here, Nick said, handing her the book. Happy birthday.
Alice opened the diminutive tome and saw a young blonde girl staring back at her. It took a few seconds before Alice realized why the girl seemed so familiar. She turned the page and found the same face staring up at her, a winning grin on its face, and a trophy hoisted overhead. More pages, same girl, slowly growing into a more recognizable woman. She didn't speak. She literally couldn't think of any words. Instead, she simply looked up at Nick for explanation.
You once told me you didn't have many pictures of your mom. You'd be surprised how many times we all end up in pictures on public record. Anyway, I know a guy who knows a guy who specializes in this sort of...
Ugh! Nick's sentence was cut off by Alice spearing him in the chest as she engulfed him in a hug. Her arms knit around him and squeezed, her head resting on his chest. She held him like that for some time before either spoke.
Thank you.
My pleasure, Nick said, quite honestly for once.
They stayed in place for a moment more before Nick disturbed the quiet peace.
If you're going to keep cuddling me like this, then I demand either sex or dinner. I've got my principles as a man, after all.
Alice laughed and released her grip on him.
Sorry, I just got a little...
Don't worry about it. I had a similar reaction when Miss Pipps gave me my book.
Your book?
Well, yeah. How do you think I know a guy who specializes in this sort of thing? I wanted to see my parents, too, Nick explained.
Of course. Sometimes I forget there's a real guy behind the smartassery and sunglasses,
Alice said.
Oh, he's real, all right. Real freaking tired. I'm off to bed, and if you're smart, you'll do the same, Nick said, rising from the couch.
I'll go to bed soon,
Alice assured him.
Sure, sure, Nick said. He walked over to the boy's side and opened the door. It's your night. Stay up as late as you want. I hope you had a good birthday, though.
I did,
Alice said. Nick nodded and stepped through the door, leaving Alice alone once again. She flipped through the book some more, savoring each new image in every detail, right down to the sound of the pages flipping.
I really did.
114. Today, Dean Blaine said, as the class settled into their seats, I want to talk about categorization. Dean Blaine began walking along the front of the classroom, stepping out of his usual center area. Controllers, generators, absorbers, healers, enchanters, shifters, speeders, teleporters, advanced minds, and illusionists, Dean Blaine said, ticking off each term on his hands as he rattled them out. And that's just a few off the top of my head. The full list of all the classified types of supers goes on for several pages and is constantly evolving. Just from that statement, what can you tell me about the nature of this categorization? Mr. Murray?
Will's head snapped up. He hadn't raised his hand, nor had anyone else. Dean Blaine had called on him before even Stella had the chance to bark her answer.
A cursory analysis would suggest that if we're still adapting something as general as the categories for different supertypes, then it means we're still in a state of discovery regarding them,
Will said.
Very good, Mr. Murray, Dean Blaine complimented. Will is correct. We are still learning more and more about supers every day. Not just how certain powers function either, but learning more about the broad spectrum different abilities can fall under. That isn't the whole story, though. Anyone else? Mr. Matthews, perhaps.
A long, lean boy in the front row snapped to attention.
I guess it implies that there is still active research ongoing in the field of supers?
He ventured.
True, but a restatement of Will's previous conjecture. Please pay more attention, Terence,
Dean Blaine told him.
Let me add this nugget to the discussion. Did anyone else know that, until 7 years ago, Mr. Murray's ability was not actually recognized as a power? Show of hands.
Will and Jill slowly put their hands up. The rest of the classes remained down.
Thank you. You may put them down now, Dean Blaine said. So, until 7 years ago, Mr. Murray would not have been considered for the HCP. He would have been classified human by all metrics of the time. Yet here we are, 7 years later, and he is doing exceptionally well, posting excellent marks on a consistent basis. So what changed 7 years ago that altered Mr. Murray from a mere human to a super, and a hero candidate at that?
Duh,
Stella said, voicing her opinion at last.
You already told us. Extreme technological genius was classified as a power.
I did, Miss Hawkins, I did indeed. But that's merely what I said. I'm looking to see if anyone noticed what I told you. There's a conclusion here that I want you to reach,
Dean Blaine said. It was a soft, unfamiliar voice to most of the class that piped up at last.
The labels don't mean anything,
Camille said, barely breaking over a whisper.
And why is that?
Dean Blaine probed.
Because nothing significant really changed. Will can invent things that make him a candidate to be a hero. That's true whether you call him a super or not. He'll always have that capability.
That is correct, Camille,
Dean Blaine said.
No change in terminology can take away the actual talent Mr. Murray has, nor any of your abilities. There was a time when telepaths were all thought to be charlatans, and illusionists nothing more than skilled stage magicians. It's only over time, as these respective groups have consistently demonstrated their abilities, that they have been reclassified. Which brings us to the most important thing you need to know about categorization.
It was Vince who raised his hand this time, and Dean Blaine gave him the nod. They're reactionary. The terms, the categories, everything in that area is created in response to new supers or powers showing up and changing what they thought they knew.
Very good, Vince, Dean Blaine agreed. And that is the heart of the matter. Some of you are classified as shifters or healers or absorbers, and while the terms are comforting in that they make us feel like someone higher up in the chain knows what is going on, it is critical that you all recognize them for what they are. Words. It is human nature to put words to things, to file and sort even the ineffable. We do this because it makes us feel like we can control that chaos.
Dean Blaine stepped back into the center of the room and gazed at the faces of his charges.
Chaos is not here to be controlled. It cannot and it will not bend to the will of something as fleeting as an ancillary term ascribed to it. You are not controllers or teleporters or even supers. You are individual people with individual skills. Never forget that. And never, ever forget that the same can be said for anyone you face out in the field. Grouping is a lovely tool for paperwork and mental accounting. Assuming you know what a person is capable of because you know the general shape of his power is dangerous, though. Often, it's downright deadly.
Deadly? Stella snickered.
Yes, Miss Hawkins, deadly. Because 7 years ago, if you had run across a predecessor of Mr. Murray who lacked his moral code committing a crime, you would have undoubtedly assumed him to be nothing more than another frail, powerless human,
Dean Blaine said.
Yeah, Stella agreed.
And when he pulled out a device capable of liquefying steel, then utilized it, what would you have thought of him then?
Well,
that is incorrect, Miss Hawkins. You would have thought nothing, because with all due respect to everyone's individual beliefs about the afterlife, dead people do not think.
Okay, fine. But obviously someone realized Will has a real ability and took notice of it, Stella said. So that's a bad example.
Dean Blaine raised an eyebrow.
Yes, Miss Hawkins, someone took notice. I want you all to think about something, though. Which seems more likely? That there was a long certification process through which ample evidence and documentation was provided, making the case for technological brilliance to be considered a power? Or that a scenario very similar to the one I just described occurred, and a hero's corpse was all the proof that was needed?
Oh,
Stella said, sliding down a few inches in her chair.
Yes. Oh.
Dean Blaine realized he'd been addressing Stella directly and turned back to the rest of the class.
Please remember, a story like that is applicable to almost all of your powers.
Some of the more astute students noticed a sliver of sadness in his voice at his next words. Luckily, they were also astute enough to gather the reason and keep it to their damn selves.
So keep your wits about you and never make assumptions. Because I'd very much prefer it if the next power to be added to the list was done so through the boring paperwork route. It would be a very welcome change of pace.
115. Sasha's lips pressed firmly against Vince's neck, slowly trailing down to his collarbone. She kissed that more delicately, then gently nipped a bit of the skin between her teeth. The first time she'd tried this trick, things had gone poorly, but Sasha was an older, more practiced girl now. Her hands worked her way under his shirt, her nails slowly etching their way up his back. He'd always been lean, but with each month, the body she touched was growing stronger and more muscular. He'd been cute when they first met. Now, the boy was bordering on hot. She reversed the direction of her hands, circling around and leaving scratches down his front. She paused when she reached his belt line and took a moment to lightly run a finger across the implied border. She ran her left hand from one hip to the other, marking the line in the skin. Then she pressed onward, downward. Her thumb popped the button on his pants before Vince reacted.
"That's okay," he said,
taking her adventurous digits and clasping them caringly in his own conservative ones.
"I'm fine with just kissing."
Sasha sighed and sat back. They were on the couch in her common room, making out, yet again, at the end of one of their dates. Most of the other girls were off having fun. Naked fun at that, Sasha knew all too well. So she and Vince were free to pursue their hanky-panky right here in the open. Unfortunately, it was, once more, turning out to be all hanky and no panky.
"I know you're fine with just kissing,"
Sasha said, exasperation settling in and making itself quite at home in her voice.
"You've been fine with just kissing me, your girlfriend, for months now. And while I appreciate the gentlemanly care that entails, I have to tell you, I'm starting to wonder if there's something bigger here. I mean, you find me attractive, right?"
Sasha leaned forward a bit at the word attractive, treating Vince to a panoramic view down the front of her low-cut shirt. She was wearing tight denim shorts as well, and, although Vince didn't know it, lingerie designed to plump and pull in all the right directions. She'd put in a lot of work to look sexy tonight, in the exceptionally frustrating exercise of trying to seduce her own boyfriend, and it had paid off. She was beautiful in a way that conveyed accessibility rather than intimidation. Vince swallowed.
"You're gorgeous. I find you incredibly attractive. That's not it."
"Then what is it? I know you don't want to push me or anything, but in case you've missed the signals, you aren't pushing anything. I'm ready. I have been in a continual state of readiness for some time now, so where are we hitting the snag?"
"I'm not," Vince said.
"You're not what?"
"Not ready."
Vince took a breath and glanced away from Sasha, trying to get some of his blood flowing in the proper directions.
"You're 18 and male. A sweet male, but yeah, pretty sure there's a biological mandate that you guys are always ready at this age,"
Sasha pointed out.
"If you aren't, then I'm guessing there's a deeper reason than just being nervous about your first time."
Vince thought very carefully before his next answer. He'd never lied to Sasha about this, or even hinted in that direction. He had noticed that she'd never asked him the question, though, and somewhere along the line he suspected the assumption she'd made. That was going to make this awkward, but he'd made that choice of non-action, and now he had to face the consequences for it.
"It wouldn't be my first time," Vince admitted. "I'm not a virgin."
Sasha's eyes widened.
Wait, what?
I'm not a virgin, Vince repeated.
Look, I understand you might have messed around with a girl a little and accidentally finished, but that doesn't count as losing your...
Sasha, Vince said, taking her hand. I've had sex. Full-on, real-deal sex.
Wow. When? I mean, was it a girl you met in the program before me?
We met on the first day, Vince reminded her. And no, it's no one here. It was years ago.
Years? How many years are we talking?
Sasha asked.
I mean, you're 18 now, so...
I was 16, Vince told her.
Stop! Thief!
Vince's breath was ragged as he pounded through the dense forest. A rogue branch scratched at his face, but he didn't so much as break stride. He needed to keep...
I was 17,
Sasha said, snapping Vince back to the moment at hand.
I guess we never really talked about it, but I mean, I figured you would assume after knowing me this long. And of course, I assumed from the way you kept holding off that... Anyway, I was wrong.
It's my fault, too, Vince said. I thought you might be under that impression, and I didn't correct you. That was wrong of me, and I am so very deeply sorry. I understand if you want me to leave.
Sasha barked out a laugh, then subsided into a fit of giggles.
Wow, she said, once she'd regained her composure. I can't believe you sometimes. I mean, here I am wondering if this semi-secret means there's some hidden, darker side to you, and then you go and apologize because you thought I might have made a wrong guess about you and you didn't immediately correct me.
But I really am sorry, Vince repeated.
I know you are, sweetie,
Sasha said, her posture relaxing.
That's part of what makes you so you. It's not your fault I assumed you were a virgin. If I wanted to know, I should have just asked. You wouldn't have lied to me.
Of course not, Vince said.
Of course not,
Sasha echoed, leaning in and kissing him. This wasn't a kiss like earlier, meant to seduce. This was one driven by so much emotional connection that it burst forth and had to manifest in a physical form. This was her kissing him because, in that moment, she simply had to. It was as unstoppable as an airborne object's eventual descent. They eventually parted, but their faces stayed close, almost touching, yet not quite, as they picked up their conversation.
So, if you've already lost it, and you keep putting me off, and it's not because I'm unattractive to you, then I can only guess that the first time didn't go so hot,
Sasha speculated.
It was fine during, Vince said. It was the after that was problematic.
That can happen, she said. And you're not ready to try it again?
If it matters that much to you, then maybe I can...
No.
This time, it was Sasha's turn to cut off Vince.
You wouldn't ask me to do something I wasn't ready for to make you happy. I'm not going to do that to you. Take your time. I'll be here when you're ready.
Thank you.
No problem, cutie,
Sasha assured him.
That said, when you are ready, I expect to be told immediately. I don't care if we're knocking people senseless in the middle of gym and a rogue blow puts it in your head. Immediately. No delays. Zip. Deal?
Vince laughed. Deal.
Good,
Sasha said, kissing him lightly once more.
For now, though, let's go hit the video store.
116.
In the course of any given year, there are certain periods which elicit expectation in their arrival among different demographics. In most of America, the season of football is met with widespread anticipation. In Seattle, there is a constant hope for a period called 2 days in a row when it doesn't fucking rain. The deeper South looks forward year-round to its 3 days of winter, or Christmas, when they are able to wear long-sleeved shirts and pants without bursting into sweaty messes. Some seasons, however, are enjoyed less by a geographical demographic and more by a gender-based one.
God, I love miniskirt season,
Alex said, as he, Herschel, and Vince trekked their way across campus to the cafeteria. His comment was sparked by the bevy of co-eds currently crossing their paths, many of whom were employing the aforementioned fashion device.
Pretty sure they call that spring nowadays, Vince said.
They can call it what they want, Alex replied. I know what I look forward to, and it is not the increase in heat.
Despite debate about its proper term, spring had undoubtedly sprung. Gone at last were the occasional snow flurries, the chilling wind and desolate landscape. In their place was a bounty of foliage and endless warming sunshine.
Call it whatever, Herschel chimed in. I'm just glad I don't have to wear a jacket anymore. I've been ready for this ever since the beginning of Christmas break. That far back?
Alex asked.
Chicago is really cold, Herschel said lamely.
In truth, it had been their trip up the mountain that had soured him on winter weather, but he could hardly explain that to Alex without going into why the Melbrook students had taken an extra midterm. That was a conversation Herschel hoped to put off until an appropriate time. Like, say, on his deathbed.
So I've heard, Alex said, not sounding too convinced. But who cares? It's over now. And just in time for spring break!
Alex actually yelled the last two words, leaping up and punching the air. On a coolness scale of 1 to 10, it looked ridiculous. Nonetheless, there were other calls of spring break! And some generic woos! That met Alex's enthusiastic outcry.
Plus, we get the best spring break out of anyone, Alex said. Next week at this time, we'll be floating down the river, surrounded by friends and girls in swimsuits, and no fear about getting busted if someone sees us using our talents. It will be heaven.
I'm not sure how some people would feel about heaven, including young women in skimpy clothing, but I see where you're going. Vince said. And it will be fun to get away from it all for a while.
Glad you finally got on board, Alex said. How about you, Herschel? Excited? What, are you joking? That trip is going to be all Roy, Herschel said. He's been excited about it since January, and that is definitely more his scene than mine. Aw, that sucks, Alex said. You don't even want to hang out for a while?
Nope, Herschel said.
Roy's been pretty accommodating about letting me have some weekend time to spend with Mary. I owe him this. I guess I can see your point, Alex admitted. Still, it won't be as fun without you. I'm sure Mary will feel the same.
I doubt it, Herschel replied.
She isn't going. Seriously? Have you met her? Yeah, the wild, drunken river trip isn't her idea of a good time, Herschel said.
Wait, people are staying? Vince asked.
Don't even think about it, Alex snapped. If Herschel's not going to be there, then you have no way out. Besides, we both know how much Sasha is looking forward to it.
I almost forgot that, Vince said.
He shrugged his shoulders. Oh well, I already signed up anyway, and I'm sure it will be plenty of fun.
That's better, Alex said. So, Herschel is out, Mary is out. Any other friends skipping the class trip?
Not that I know of, Herschel said. Nick and Alice are both gung-ho. Same for Will, Jill, Thomas, and his friends, Vince added.
Good, good,
Alex said.
Then we can still have an awesome time.
That is the goal.